I'm your host, as always, Adam Martin. I'll be taking you guys through the latest in the world of MMA. You can follow me on Twitter at MMAdamMartin. This podcast is available at MMAOzbreaker.com. Go to our YouTube channel, like, share, subscribe, tell your friends about it. Also, check me out at BJPenn.com and MMARings.net. So September's in the rearview mirror now, crazy enough, and now it's October. So that month went by very fast. But we've got a lot to talk about this month. I should mention in about an hour, I'll be doing the UFC 243 breakdown podcast with Cole Shelton, so definitely check that out. But for now, we'll be talking about the news in the world of MMA, the world that we love. Okay, so let's start with John Jones and Jackson Wink. So there's a lot of trouble with Jackson Wink, apparently. Frank Lester, the striking coach there, was recently let go, according to his post. He says he was fired. There were some issues there with payment from John Jones, according to Frank Lester. He says John Jones owes him some money from the Thiago Santos fight. He also said some not so nice things about Mike Winklejohn, who's obviously one of the big names there. This isn't the first time someone's criticized Mike Winklejohn. We all know that. Don Cerrone kind of went after him a little bit. I think it was earlier this year, and a few other fighters have as well. So there's definitely some trouble brewing in that camp. We've known that for a while now. For the last couple of years, a lot of fighters have left, like Don Cerrone, Diego Sanchez, a couple other guys. So a lot of their really staple fighters are no longer there. Of course, John Jones is still the big name there. He's still the big fish in the sea. And according to Frank Lester, John Jones owes him money. And he says that John Jones stole from his family. And he wrote a scathing piece on social media on his Instagram. So definitely got a lot of buzz yesterday. And then, of course, John Jones, as expected, responded to it. He pretty much said that it's not true. And he said that he has no reason to threaten him, because he did kind of threaten him in the post. He said he sees John Jones is on site, which obviously is a threat. And Jones says that it's not true, and that if he wants to threaten him, he should just call his lawyer, basically. And he said he'll take him to court. So, you know, something obviously is going on there, as we know. John Jones is not the most innocent guy. He's obviously getting into trouble quite often. But at the same time, though, it's one of those things. They're airing their dirty laundry against each other on social media. I personally don't love that. But clearly this guy, Frank Lester, is pissed off. He just lost his job as a striking coach there, so that's not good. But he says he's going to open another gym, so things will probably work out for him. But yeah, it's just crazy, like, that this camp has had so much dysfunction the last little while. It arguably was the top camp in MMA for years, when you had guys like John Jones and Carlos Condit, Don Cerrone, Rashad Evans for a while there before John Jones had the fight. There were so many good fighters there. It's still a good camp. It's just you don't hear as much, especially about Greg Jackson. Greg Jackson used to be like such a big name in this sport, I found, and I don't hear much about Greg Jackson these days. It's like you really don't hear his name at all. So it's kind of crazy, right? It's really changed. It's really Mike Winklejohn's camp now. So we'll see what happens with this. I mean, I'm sure this isn't the end of the story. I'm sure you'll hear Frank Lester say something else, but yeah, definitely interesting to hear Frank Lester airs dirty laundry and John Jones respond to him, basically threatening to take him to court if he says anything else. So again, we'll see what happens with this, but definitely worth mentioning. All right, a couple other things here. Anthony Johnson, unfortunately, is in the news again for the wrong reasons. Warrant has been issued for his arrest. This is according to a report from my buddy Tim Bissell over at Bloody Elbow. He does a great job there at Bloody Elbow with the investigative reporting. According to his article, the Palm Beach County has issued a warrant for Johnson just a couple days ago. He had missed an appointment due to a recent domestic battery charge that he received earlier this year. There was that story about Johnson allegedly carrying his girlfriend and I think dropping her into a bed or something. You got to read more about that story. It's kind of a strange thing, but definitely he was arrested for that on a domestic violence charge. Not his first time being arrested at all. So Johnson's obviously had some troubles with the law himself. Still, you know, one of the biggest names probably in the sport. He wants to come back. If he comes back, it's going to be a big thing for the UFC. He wants to come back as a heavyweight. It'd be his fourth weight class in the UFC. So the guy is an incredible fighter, but just can't seem to keep himself out of trouble. And this is another instance of that. So very unfortunate news. You know, as far as a fighter goes, I'm a big fan of Anthony Johnson. I think he's a great fighter. A lot of fun to watch. And, you know, fourth weight class, that's going to be fun to watch and very interesting. I think that could be the first guy in UFC history to fight in four weight classes. I could be wrong about that, but it seems like it might be. Or maybe it was Vitor Belfort, actually. I guess Vitor would be, because he did. Yeah, it could be Vitor. I don't know. Either way, Johnson, yeah, he's an interesting fighter for sure. But with all this stuff going on outside the cage and his personal life, you got to wonder if it does affect his ability to come back we'll see what happens. Obviously, this story's not done yet either. I'm sure we'll hear something as far as an update goes in the next few days, but definitely worth talking about the report here from Bloody Elbow. A couple other things here. Josh Barnett, I like this one a lot. So Josh Barnett was in Dublin for Bellator's card the other day, and he was asked by the media. Okay, first off, he was asked who he wants to fight, and he said he wants to fight Fedor, which we already knew about. We knew Bellator wants to book that fight. Scott Coker said that a few times, he wants to book that fight. He did change his tune a little bit the other day when he was asked about the fight. He said that he thinks Barnett should probably fight someone else first before Fedor. At the same time, though, I think Fedor only has one, maybe two fights left in his career. So if they're going to do the Barnett fight, it's going to have to happen now. But Josh Barnett says he has a ton of respect for Fedor. He calls him a friend, says he wants to fight him. I think that'd be a great fight, two legends of the sport. A very fair matchup at this point of their career. So I'd like to see that fight personally, but it seems like Bellator might go another way. He was also asked about Rampage, and he said he's not interested. Again, he's Rampage's friend, according to Josh Barnett, and he's just not interested in fighting Rampage. He said he'll play him in video games, he'll play him in Tekken, but he doesn't want to fight him. You know, Josh Barnett, for all his troubles, I mean, the guy, he's been, you know, he's had a lot of issues over the years with drug testing. He had the issue with USADA that cost him a couple years. Eventually, he actually did win that case, and he was released from the UFC because he wanted to be released, and they let him go sign with Bellator. He has not fought yet, but the guy is—he's arguably one of the greatest heavyweights of all time. Former UFC heavyweight champion, obviously, but you know he's up there in his age now. He's low 40s. I think he's 41, so he's probably doesn't have many fights left either in his career. But he did mention this. He says he wants Bellator to do a heavyweight legends tournament. I love this. I really do. And he says he wants it to be a one-night-only tournament with a 10-minute first round, which is super cool. I mean, that's like Pride style. That won't happen. The 10-minute first round won't happen. And let's be honest, they won't allow fighters to probably do a tournament in one night at this point of MMA in 2019. You know, 10 years ago probably, but not now. It's unfortunate, though. I think the one-night-only thing makes a lot of sense. You know, Josh Burton, I basically said, you know, they're too old. And if you spread over, the risk of someone getting hurt is very high. I mean, we saw that in the Strikeforce Grand Prix. With Daniel Cormier, he got inserted because there was injury. So, and he actually ended up winning that. That was back in, 2012 or whatever. So that was a tournament that was spread over a couple of years. Obviously, Bellator does that now, spreading their tournament over the course of a year. I still think it's a good idea, though. And I'd love to see Barnett compete in that tournament. And, you know, I posted the article about BJ Penn, and I was just looking at some of the replies on the Facebook page. Just people were kind of just guessing who would be in that tournament. You'd have Barnett, and you'd have Fedor, obviously Rampage. You'd have Roy Nelson, a couple other guys like Frank Mir, and there's definitely eight guys they could put in that tournament. I think their last tournament, the heavyweight one, it was an okay tournament. Obviously, Ryan Bader won, that was good, but there was too many like light heavyweights in that tournament. Guys like Chael Sonnen who really didn't belong in that tournament. So if they actually do end up doing another heavyweight tournament, which I don't think is a bad idea. I hope it's really put Gia Congo in there as well. Maybe they could sign some guys that the UFC cuts in the next little while. But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting idea. And I think, well, yeah, it's cool, you know. But the one night only thing, I love that. I love the 10-minute first round. So, you know, Barnett's, he's right up my alley, man. I mean, Josh Barnett's a Pride veteran, a UFC veteran. Like I said, arguably one of the greatest heavyweights of all time. Of course, had so many troubles with drug testing over the years that really never got to show his true potential because he was always being suspended. But he still is a great fighter, and I'm curious to see what he does in his Bellator debut. Again, they are apparently, according to Scott Coker, they're waiting to see what happens with Bison because they want to do that card New Year's Eve, and they want Barnett to fight in that card. It doesn't look like Fader's going to be the opponent, but there's still a chance. You never know. Fader doesn't have an opponent yet. But yeah, I do think Fader and Barnett will both fight in that card, just maybe not against each other. All right, one other piece of news here I want to mention. Alexa Grasso, she recently lost a majority decision to Carla Esparza at UFC Mexico City. It was a very close fight, but she lost. I thought she lost the fight. She lost the first two rounds. You know, she won the third round for sure, but the first two rounds went to Carla. So she's actually talking now about moving up the flyweight, which I think is a great idea. I really do. It makes a lot of sense. You know, at this point of her UFC career, she's 3-3. She's win-loss, win-loss, win-loss. And it's time to make a move. You know, she's kind of proven, I think, with the losses to Herrig, Suarez, and Esparza, she's just not an elite fighter at 115. She's not as good as we thought she was. I don't think she's a bad fighter. I just think it's time to make a change. And if that's a weight class change, that's not a bad idea. So why not? And she also mentioned she wants to fight at UFC South Korea, and she wants to fight someone local there. So she talked about how she likes how Brian Ortega is going to South Korea to fight the Korean Zombie, and she'd like to do the same thing. So maybe she just wants to take the fight on short notice because it's kind of – or sorry, fight up a weight class because it's somewhat short notice. I mean, it's 2 months away, so she has enough time to train. I really think that she's just saying that, you know, as far as, for the travel, that's why I don't want to cut the weight. I just think it's because she wants to make a move in her career and it's time to do something different. And she has missed weight before. We can't forget that. She missed weight when she fought Randy Marcos 2 years ago. She came in at 119. So I wouldn't say she's like a huge straw weight of anything. She's 5'5". She's kind of like a medium-sized straw weight, but she could definitely fight at 125. We've seen fighters like Paige VanZant move up. I think Paige is kind of like, let me just check with how big she is. I think Paige is probably like a very similar size. Paige VanZant, 5'4". So she's even shorter than Grasso. She moved up to flyweight. So I think Grasso moving to flyweight makes so much sense. That division is very wide open. Honestly, if she does fight Valentina eventually, she'll probably get smashed. I think most people would. But at the same time, she's probably like one or two wins away from her title shot at that weight class. Whereas at strawweight, she's probably like 3 or 4 wins away from her title shot. So I think Grasso's actually thinking on the right track here. Move up a weight class, try something else, and why not, right? And if anything, she can always go back and wait in a couple years if this doesn't work out for her. And that's a great segue to my next comment here about fight announcements. So I got a couple of fight announcements to talk about here. And the first was Kevin Lee. And like Grasso, Kevin Lee moved up to welterweight, and now he's moving back down to lightweight after welterweight didn't work out for him. And he's going to be fighting Gregor Gillespie at UFC 244. This is a great fight. I love this matchup. It's a fight that's been rumored for a little while. Both guys have talked about it. I think I've talked on the show recently. They were both kind of going back and forth on Instagram. I think Gregor called Kevin Lee. He called a bunch of guys. He called like Anthony Pettis, a bunch of guys. He's been looking for a big fight, a bigger name fight for a while now. And he gets it here, Kevin Lee. So Gregor Gillespie is an amazing fighter. I think this guy, you talk about the best grapplers in lightweight, he's right behind Habib. He's an incredible wrestler. He really is. He's looked great in the UFC. He's 6-0 now in the UFC, 13-0 in his career. Having said that, I mean, look at the level of competition. Glaco Franca, Andrew Holbrook, Jason Gonzalez, Jordan Rinaldi, Vince Pichel, Yancy Medeiros. So he's fought a couple notable fighters like Pichel and Medeiros, but it's not just that. He's destroyed these guys. Like five of his six wins in the UFC are by stoppage. The last 5 wins by stoppage, submission and TKO. So he can finish you on the ground either by choke or by strikes. This guy's very dangerous, and I think he could be one of the best guys in the world. He just needs that opportunity. Now he gets it against Kevin Lee. Kevin Lee's actually younger. He's 27. So Gillespie's 32. He's a little bit older than you think because he's kind of a late bloomer. Started fighting in 2014. But Kevin Lee, 27, so he's a little younger. Kevin Lee, he's kind of a hit or miss fighter. I mean, he really is. He's looked amazing at times, like the Barboza fight. That was absolutely incredible performance. That was only last April. But since then, really struggled. The I Quinta fight was not a good performance. And the RDA fight, he looked terrible in that fight. I thought he'd look a lot better at welterweight. He looked absolutely terrible in that fight. His cardio really failed him. He got dominated pretty much by RDA. So Kevin Lee, he's lost 3 of his last. Can't forget that one win is against Barboza, and he absolutely smashed Edson Barboza, finished in my 5th round TKO. That was an excellent performance. He's looked good in the UFC. Now, he has had trouble making weight. I don't know if he will make weight for this fight. It's only a month away. I feel like it's really soon, personally. It's like pretty much exactly a month away. So I think he might have trouble making weight for this fight, but either way, it's a great fight. Who do I favor? I kind of favor Gillespie. And I think a lot of people are going to favor Gillespie. I think this kid, I wouldn't say kid, actually, he's older than me. This guy is fantastic, and I've been nothing but impressed with him. Having said that, this is obviously a big step up in competition. Kevin Lee is a very solid fighter. He's proven that. So Gillespie's got to be in his game here, but I think that Gregor Gillespie is a very, very solid fighter. Great wrestler, good submission skills, good ground and pound. Kevin Lee, really good fighter too, but hasn't looked good lately, and I think this could be a really dangerous fight for him. So risky fight for Kevin Lee, but you know what? When you lose 3 of your last 4 fights, you got to take what the UFC gives you, and that's a fight with Gregor Gillespie. So I think Kevin Lee probably loses this fight. I like Gillespie. I'm looking forward to seeing the odds for that one. And I should mention there was some article or report, I should say, with Brad Okamoto about some guy laying $30,000 on Jorge Masvidal, that same card, UFC 244. That's kind of crazy to me. You know what? The more I think about that fight, I feel like Nate Diaz might have a better chance than a lot of us think. Like, Nate Diaz right now, +160 underdog. After the way he looked against Diaz, don't count Nate Diaz in that fight. I mean, Masvidal, of course, deserves to be favored after the knockout wins over Askren and Till, but don't count on Nate Diaz against Masvidal. I think he has a good chance to win that fight. Last but not least, another fight announcement here. Kevin Holland stepping up to fight Brendan Allen at UFC Boston. Eric Spice pulled out of the fight, so Kevin Holland steps up on somewhat short notice. He was going to fight in November in Sao Paulo, Brazil against Arroyo from the Contender Series, but instead you'll be fighting Brendan Allen. So Kevin Hall, another guy who's been hit and miss in the UFC, looked good at times, looked bad at times, very hit and miss. He's 3-1 overall, lost to Thiago Santos in his debut, not a good performance, but beat John Phillips by submission. Then he had the fight with Gerald Meerschaert, which was super close. He won a split decision. Then he won a unanimous decision against Alessio De Chirico in his last fight, which a lot of people thought he lost. So he honestly could be 1-3 right now in the UFC, or best 2-2. I think the 3-1 record, you know, it's kind of a lucky record of anything, because he's got two straight decisions that he could have easily lost. He takes on Brendan as well, another Contender Series alum. Four straight wins. This kid is pretty great, I think. Looked amazing against Aaron Jeffrey. Of course, that's not even close to the level that Kevin Holland's at. So this is a big step up for this guy. He's fought a couple of good fighters in his career. Eric Anders lost decision to him. Anthony Hernandez lost decision to him. Trevin Giles was submitted by him. So when he stepped up in competition, he's lost. But at the same time, he's only 23. So he's super young. Trains at Rufus Sport. That's a good camp. I think you have to favor Brendan Allen in this fight, but again, Kevin Holland does have more experience in the UFC at least, and he's proven he can win, although, again, I think some of those wins are a little bit lucky. He does have a little bit more experience as well, so should be an interesting fight, but kind of lean towards Allen slightly. I just don't think you can go crazy on it, and I'm just going to double-check to see if I missed anything, but again, if I have, we'll probably talk about it with Nicole Shelton in a little bit here. I think that's all I want to talk about here. Yep, that's it. Oh, quickly, there's a mural that was painted at American Top Team of Jorge Masvidal knocking out Ben Askren, and super cool. And also, I saw on Reddit that the guy who painted it actually posted a thread saying, he was the guy called in to do the painting. So that's super cool. Cool for that guy. Great opportunity for him, obviously. So I wanted to mention that. But I think that's it. So I want to talk about again on today's podcast. And actually, one quick thing: the Demir Liada and Michael Page. And I didn't really talk about this yesterday, but there was an issue there with Michael Page and Demir Liada. The commission has cleared all three of them, including the opponent Richard Kiley. But Demir Liada is talking now. He says he'll never do it with Michael Page in it again. He says that he was wrong for saying something. He had kind of sworn at him or something like that. But yes, Mike Buzzulli says that Demir Liada will not. He'll not refer another fight with Michael Page. So I want to mention that. But yeah, that's about it for today. You guys can follow me on Twitter at @MMAdamMartin. This podcast, as always, is available at MMAOddsBreaker.com. Go to our YouTube channel, like, share, subscribe, tell your friends about it. Also, check me out, BJPenn.com, MMARings.net. I'll be back at 11 a.m. with Cole Shelton breaking down UFC 243. I'm excited to talk about that card. Have a good one, guys. I'll see you soon. Bye.